Let her speak.
Let her speak. Let her speak.
What is she doing out there?
I'll cut off her mic.
No. Let her speak.
Let Her Speak is a show that works its way through the alphabet from A to Z. We talk about music and culture and things we're obsessed with. We flirt with controversy and politics, always framed by a single letter. This is the letter that means 1,000. It's a popular word for a friend in some cultures. General admission and good for families and a measurement of weight. This week, we're going to greet the letter G. Welcome to Let Her Speak. Hi, Tina.
Hi.
The letter G.
George Michael.
I bet you there's a lot of people in the world named Michael George.
Oh, I bet.
There's probably a lot of people named George Michael, too.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But no, he's an interesting guy.
Yeah, I think one of the first cassette tapes I ever owned was a George Michael one.
So, you know, you think of George Michael, you think of Wham, and they're ridiculously over the top. Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Yeah.
Have you seen the video for that? It's from the 80s. I don't know if you've caught up.
20 years ago, maybe. Yeah. They're wearing those shirts, right?
Yeah.
Just say go-go on them in big letters.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. It's a great video. So energetic. And honestly, that song, if it ever comes out on at a kind of like 80s night or a dance night or something, like it's a good one. It's a good one to bust a move to.
Yeah. I think it wasn't Wham, though. It was George Michael's solo album, Faith.
Oh, yeah. That's a good song, too.
Which, now that I think back to it, was a very racy album for me to have as a child. But I just think maybe my parents weren't paying that much attention.
Yeah, probably not.
Or they were and they thought it was fine.
They were like, she'll learn about stuff this way.
It didn't have swear words, but it did say the word sex a lot on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And a fan who's listening right now also is commenting on the fact that George Michael from Arrested Development was named after George Michael. I'm assuming it's named after the singer.
I had a few sort of angles that we could take on this, but I know we discussed one angle, but then I kind of got into looking into the video for Freedom 90.
Yeah. Great video.
For those listening at home, if they remember the one, that's the one with all the supermodels in it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to play the song in a few minutes because it's a great song.
Oh, the video is sexy as hell.
We'll build up to that. But I was like reading into this video and I'm totally enamored with everything that I have learned. So first things first, it was called Freedom 90 because Wham had a hit song called Freedom.
Oh.
So they, which I didn't even know. So
I just remember a lot of stuff blowing up in this video.
Yeah, he blew up. So right around the time that he had recorded the album, he was really like weary of fame and wasn't into fame and was kind of had gotten over the hump of that like early fame where he just wanted to be on camera all the time and was in a phase where he was really kind of turning away from it.
Was he seeking freedom?
You might say he was seeking freedom. So he said in an interview to the Los Angeles Times, at some point in your career, the situation between yourself and the camera reverses. For a certain number of years, you court it and you need it, but ultimately it needs you more. And it's a bit like a relationship. The minute that happens, it turns you off. So he was just over being on camera. We're hearing from the listeners at home. The internet stream is not working. Okay. Well, we'll get that worked out.
Yeah. We'll figure it out.
So he just had enough basically of being on camera. So they hatched this plan. So the video was done with David Fincher, who is now a famous film director. He did that film, The Social Network. And they hatched this plan that instead of putting George Michael in the video, they would put all these supermodels in the video. So, Naomi Campbell, Linda Evangelista, Tatiana Patiz, Christina Turlington, which Christy Turlington and Cindy Crawford. I feel like Tatiana Patiz, I recognize her face, but her name isn't quite have the same like level of recognition as the other ones.
Oh, no.
So the five of them had been the cover of the 1990 edition of Vogue magazine, and it was like an iconic image. And then they were inspired by that, and David Fincher like, hatched this plan to make the video. What are you doing over there?
I'm just reading about how they received $15,000 per day for shooting.
$15,000 per day, which is crazy because I feel like, I think it's Christy Turlington was famous for saying she wouldn't get out of bed for less than $15,000 a day.
Yeah, that's really funny. It's funny. This is right. Those are the cost of these actors. I'm quoting actors, but I guess they're acting. They're acting.
Yeah.
In the video made me think of this thing I read about a week or two ago, where it was the most expensive music videos. And there's music videos that have cost like $15 million.
It's ridiculous.
It's crazy. I think number one was Michael Jackson. The one, Black or White.
Yeah, because of all the technology.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This video is, it's interesting because that some people say it like marked like the peak of like the 90s, like supermodel trend. Because there was a time for the young listeners at home that might not remember. There was a time when the people on magazine covers were always models.
Yeah.
Which is weird now because you think about it now and it's almost always, It's always celebrities, reality stars. They're famous for some other reason and then they're on the cover of a magazine.
Yeah.
Well, but in the 90s, it was all models all the time.
Yeah. And do you remember in, did you ever see the September issue?
Yes.
Yeah. Good so, film. Yeah. Oh, such a good documentary. And there's a part where they're talking about the cover model who's an actress and like Anna Wintour just can't stand her. She's just making fun of her. She's like, oh, I wish we had like a real model.
A real model.
Yeah. She's like, oh, this woman is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and that was sort of like, so this video was made like right in the peak of that. It was like the huge popularity. There's supermodel and supermodel and supermodel. And then it was kind of like the end of it. So it in the 1991 fall fashion show for Gianni Versace, Crawford, Evangelista Campbell, and Turlington walked down the runway together to this song.
Crazy.
And some people say that like they stood in the huddle, they like at the end of the aisle and listening to the song. And it was like that. Some people said that that marked kind of the end of the supermodel or the peak of the supermodel era. And then after that, it started to fall into the grunge movement, G for grunge, like Kate Moss and the like Waif and Shalom Harlow and like, the Waif
It's called
models.
Heroin chic
models. And then that was also ushered in by Nirvana's 1991 album, Nevermind. Huh. So this was kind of like the last big wave of that glamorous
decadent 80s
decadent era. Yeah. I read this interesting quote from Cindy Crawford when I was reading about this, where she said something about like, how she felt like it was just a kind of like a meaningless, like fluffy, like glamorous video at the time. But then when she looks back on it, she sees how like, this idea that like video killed the radio star, like it became all about what you look like to so much to the point that the singer didn't even have to be in the video anymore. He could just put a bunch of beautiful models in it.
Yeah. And blow up a bunch of stuff.
And well, yeah. So he blew up the like jukebox and the guitar and like, basically like made a mockery of himself from his previous era.
Yeah. And a jacket.
Yeah. It was all like stuff from the Faith era.
Yeah.
So George Michael, should we listen to the song? Because we've been talking a lot about it. Are you ready to hear it?
I am ready.
So this is it. This is Freedom 90 from by George Michael.
Really.
You're listening to Let Her Speak on Van Cleek FM 88.7. What a huge tune.
It is huge.
I listened to that song. We were talking a little bit while it was playing, and we were discussing how, like I said, I feel like I really need to like listen to that whole album from beginning to end, because it's not an album that I know all of George Michael's career.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably got all kinds of golden songs on it.
Probably got some gems.
Some gems. And then I said, I also know a George Michael cover that I kind of wish that I had thought of, which was, he did a great cover of Papa Was a Rolling Stone from the same era. That was amazing.
That's cool. He did a, for the Freddie Mercury tribute concert, he did Somebody to Love.
Oh, he's got such a huge voice.
Yeah, he's really talented.
And I feel like maybe in the last little while, I feel like he's probably somewhat purposely sort of just stepped out of the limelight a little bit.
Yeah, he's kind of semi-retired-ish.
Semi-retired.
In a way. But I think he's still like... He still like makes statements about stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he's involved in music, but he's just maybe not like making his own.
Yeah. I think it was like a note to self to go digging through the back catalog a bit. See if there's some other big tracks.
And I have to recommend the song for, or the video for Let's Go Outside.
Okay.
So as you may or may not know, George Michael was caught in a bathroom.
Yes.
By basically like a sting operation to catch gay men having sex in a washroom.
Mm-hmm.
And he made fun of that. Like, I think it was arrest for, you know, public indecency or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he basically made fun of that arrest, with this cheeky video where it's a washroom and then it turns into a disco club and all the urinals flip around and they're covered in mirrored tiles.
I have not seen this.
That's gotta check it out. It's
amazing.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. He's really kind of gotten embroiled in a bunch of stuff that he was sort of forced out of the closet and,
and he's had, you know, some addiction stuff and
So
it's the '80s. What do you want? 90s.
Did he have a lot of hit records?
Oh, did he have a gold record?
I think he had a gold record.
Ooh.
That was like the most try-hard segue we've ever done.
Well, it's because we discussed it.
I know. But so we're trying to just gently segue to the Golden Girls.
Thank you for being a friend.
Yes. Speaking of golden records, the Golden Girls. How can we not talk about this show?
Yeah.
Huge hit show.
Yeah, it was massive. B. Arthur,
Betty White, Rue McClanahan, and Estelle Getty.
Oh, Betty White. She's still around.
I know. The show was on from 1985 until 1992, which were very formative.
And it had a spinoff with B. Arthur's show.
It had three spinoffs, actually.
Oh, really?
I
didn't know that.
Empty Nest, The Golden Palace, and something else. I can't remember.
Okay.
But there was three.
Okay.
The premise of the show, if you listening at home and you aren't familiar with the show Golden Girls, it was about four senior citizens who live together in a house in Miami, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
The premise in the first episode is that Blanche Devereaux, the amazing Blanche Devereaux character, owns a house in Miami, and she's a widow and she's looking for roommates. So she gets another widow, Rose Nyland, who's played by Betty White, and divorcee Dorothy, who's played by B. Arthur. They respond for a room for rent ad in a grocery store. And Sophia, who's Dorothy's mother, comes along and lives with them as well because her retirement home is burned to the ground.
Oh, well, there you go.
This is the premise.
What's the premise?
But this is an interesting thing that I learned that's kind of is an interesting fun fact that I didn't know about the show. So the pilot episode, there's another character who's a gay male cook / housekeeper who lives with them named Coco.
Oh my God.
And so in the premise of the first of the pilot, it worked really well because he was like a cook and a housekeeper. And when they would go into the kitchen, which is an important set for the show.
Yeah.
He would be in there and get to have his like funny lines.
Yeah. He'd do I haven't seen the pilot, but I'm assuming he would do throwaway, you know, oh, haha, fabulous. Like
exactly.
I'm a funny gay man named Coco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was in the pilot. And then when they got but Estelle Getty was in the pilot as well as the mom.
Okay.
But she wasn't going to be a resident of the house in the pilot. But then she was so great in the pilot and it was such like a hit that they were kind of contemplating how they could have the four characters in the kitchen at the same time. Because if you think of how like a television, five characters in a kitchen is a lot. Four characters in that kitchen makes sense because they can sit around the table. One can be standing. Right.
Yep.
And then they started writing the show. And so many of the scenes were taking place in the kitchen and made sense in the kitchen. So they just decided to write out the gay cook.
Aww.
And keep, Sophia.
Okay.
So this became the four women.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I remember watching it at my kind of like old lady neighbor's house.
Yep.
vaguely. Like, I couldn't tell you a plot point of any of these, of the shows, of the episodes. I'll have to reach back and watch it again, I think. Because it was like I've seen clips and stuff in the, you know, more modern era when yeah. people kind of reference it. Cause it was so, people loved it so much.
Yeah.
Which is the one, like, they all went on dates. Like,
oh,
they
all, Blanche, like, is the one that was, like, the most scandalous.
Okay.
Yeah. She was sassy.
There's a really good gif of her spraying herself with, like, a mister. Because she sees, like, a plant mister. Because she, like, thinks of a hot dude. And she's like, I gotta cool myself down.
They all have, like, hot flashes. Yeah. And, like,
Oh, maybe it was a hot flash.
Maybe. Well, it was funny because I felt like I've seen probably almost every episode of The Golden Girls. Because I've watched it many, many times. But I couldn't really remember. I can remember, like, details and outfits, but I couldn't really remember plots. So if you look on Gawker, there's a list ranked. So they ranked all the episodes from worst episode to best episode.
What was the worst?
I can't remember what the worst was. I started at the top of the list and started looking. And I was reading through them, and some of them were familiar. So I was like trying to get synopsis that I thought were funny, but there's only just one that I would copy. Blanche is upset when Dorothy becomes popular with the patrons of her favorite bar, the Rusty Anchor. That's the premise of that episode.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I feel like when I was reading the synopsis, I didn't feel like I remembered any of them, but the pictures next to the synopsis all looked familiar. So I feel like it'd be the kind of thing that you would watch and you would know what happened at the end, but you wouldn't realize you knew what happened at the end until halfway through.
Right. Like, I remember them wearing, you know, chintzy 80s outfits.
Yeah.
With a lot of florals.
Lots of matching, like, pant, like, track, like, I think stirrup pants. You remember stirrup pants?
Yep.
They weren't leggings. They weren't sweatpants. And they had stirrups on the bottom.
They were trousers with stirrups.
Yeah. But they were like a sweat material kind of too. They were like always like a soft fabric. They weren't quite like fleece. Okay.
But it had like a matching jacket.
And then it would have like a matching like top. Kicky top.
Yeah. Okay.
That was probably oversized. Probably had like peach or like baby green or baby blue and like maybe some silver and maybe some bronze.
Amazing.
And like a crazy pattern. And big earrings and big necklaces and big jewelry.
Yes. With the jewelry.
It was a huge hit show. It got 68 Emmy nominations and won 11 Emmy Awards and 4 Golden Globes.
Wow.
It's a huge hit show.
That's amazing.
There is, if you look on the Wikipedia page, I started to copy them and I was just like, forget it. All around the world, people have done versions of it, whether dubbed or like rewritten for that market. With four old ladies living in a house together, like Russia, Puerto Rico, Australia, England, Ireland, like all around the world.
I was just quickly trying to be like, oh, maybe I could figure out Spanish for gold. No, I can't. Dona. Ora.
So I was trying to remember how the show ended. So I don't know if you remember, but the spinoff Empty Nest, I remember it fairly well because I watched it too.
Barely. Just so, because of the like abortion episode with B. Arthur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they hit on hard hitting topics. That's one thing I want to say. Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to say is I always think of my friend Heather telling me, so my friend Heather was my friend Heather from college, and she wasn't allowed to watch the show by her parents because they thought it was too racy.
Wait, Golden Girls?
Golden Girls. Yeah. Because they dealt with like sexy topics a lot. And Blanche was like terrible. Oh, she couldn't make like, it was on mainstream television. So she couldn't make like really obvious jokes, but she definitely made like subtle humor for the adults in the room kind
of
jokes.
Was she the one who's supposed to be like the, you know, quote unquote, the slut of the group?
Yes.
It was the Betty White character.
No, it was Blanche. Betty White was like stupid.
Oh,
she was like a ditzy, like didn't get it and always told stupid stories that had like no point.
Yeah. But like one of them, okay, so there was the ditz. There was like
ditz.
Like the slutty one.
That's Blanche.
The smart one.
That's B. Arthur or Dorothy.
What was Sophia?
Sophia was really old.
And like made funny jokes?
And yeah, made like crack
people up. Like a maid again. Okay.
Yeah, she was like, picture it, Sicily, 1957. Oh. That's always how she like started her stories.
Oh, okay.
She was like the old Italian grandma.
Right. Oh man, I have to go back.
Yeah, I feel like it's, I don't know if it's on Netflix. If it's not on Netflix, it should be on Netflix so that we can watch it all. But the show ended because B. Arthur wanted to leave the show. So they wrote that into the show.
Oh, okay.
And I thought this was interesting. In the hour-long series finale, which was 1992, Dorothy meets and marries Blanche's Uncle Lucas, who was played by Leslie Nielsen.
What?
And they move away together to Georgia.
Huh.
G for Georgia.
There you go.
I know.
It all ties in.
Also, fun fact about the Golden Girls. Recently, 2003, there was a Broadway play called Golden Girls Live. And it was, not Broadway, off Broadway.
Oh, okay.
And
it wasn't officially Broadway.
It featured an all male cast in drag. And they did two back-to-back episodes. They did The Break-In, season one, episode 8, and Isn't It Romantic, season 2, episode 5. And they just did this as like the first and second act. And they continued doing it. It was a huge hit, but then they got a cease and desist from the original creators because it was like an unofficial Golden Girls Live. And they had to take it off the off-Broadway stage that it was on. Oh, man.
That's amazing.
I know. That was really fun. So Golden Girls.
Yeah.
We're going to play a song that is like really loosely related before we go into the next
segment.
Gold
in it.
It has gold in it.
Well, we were going to play, you know, Betty White rapping.
Let's get real. Betty White has had an incredible career. We could probably talk about her a lot more.
Probably. We'll wait for W.
Yeah. Meantime, this is a song by Goldfrapp called Ooh La La. Listening to Let Her Speak on Van Cleek FM 88.7. Ooh La La, fun little dance tune.
I love that song. I forget how much I love that album too.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It was used in 2013 in an iTunes commercial, so I feel like it feels more current, even though it's from, I think it's like from 2005 or something.
Oh yeah, I know, it's from a while ago.
It fits with the Golden Girls theme because we were talking about Blanche Devereaux, and it's a song about wanting a sexual relationship without romance.
Well, there you go.
I feel like is what Blanche Devereaux wanted.
Because Blanche can get it.
Also, Goldfrapp, the band, is made up by Allison Goldfrapp and Will Gregory, and both their last names start with G.
So cute.
It's like we planned it.
It's like we planned it.
Moving on to our next topic, George Harrison.
Yeah. So I just wanted to talk about basically his solo album, All Things Must Pass.
Yeah.
Which he basically released and recorded in 1970.
Yeah.
So it was immediately after the Beatles broke up, and there's all this like drama from their ending sessions and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I mean, I confess, there's some George Harrison. I don't really know this record. Like when you like told me to look it up, I was like, whoa, 28 tracks, double album.
Oh,
like,
it's a triple album.
Triple album.
Yeah.
It's massive.
Yeah.
He had a lot to say.
Yeah. And they actually, when they released it to record stores, the record stores were so confused by it because usually it was like opera and classical that had triple albums and not, you know, rock music.
Rock music.
Yes. Yeah, so they weren't entirely sure how to really classify the album, but obviously, you know, it rolls under rock and roll. Mm-hmm. So it's his first solo work since the break of the Beatles, which was in the April of 1970. Mm-hmm. It includes some hit singles, My Sweet Lord, What Is Life, Isn't It a Pity, and All Things Must Pass. And the title track was actually turned down by the Beatles.
Oh.
So it's kind of an album that was made up of stuff that he had been working on for a long time, like 20, yeah. like for years, for yeah. a few years
yeah.
from the mid 60s on.
Yeah.
Yeah, 28 tracks. Like, you don't just come up with that.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. From, almost 30 songs in a few months.
My band broke up. Here we go. Here's some hit songs.
It was all the things that he wanted to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it really established him as a, you know, excellent songwriter up with the Lennon-McCartney, blah, blah, blah.
Do you feel like Beatles fans, and I don't actually know the answer to this. Do you think that Beatles fans, if you would either have become a McCartney fan or a Lennon fan, or a George Harrison fan. Like, you could have kind of like followed. Like
post-breakup?
Yeah, post-breakup. Mm. Like, you would have had a stream and you kind of went that direction.
I wonder. That's actually a really good question to ask somebody who, like, was, like, as a fan at the contemporary of that.
Like, yeah, because I feel like there's songs even by Wings. There's songs by Wings that I don't think I realized were not Beatles songs because they would have just been on mixtapes.
Sure, yeah.
Of my dad's when I was a kid, so he would have just been playing mixtapes, and I just knew them as Beatles mixtapes.
And
Let
Me Roll It sounds like a Beatles song.
Yeah, and so then, like, until I was an adult, and actually Ed started buying Wings records, I was like, oh, this isn't a Beatles song? Like, weird. I've always just thought of it as that.
Yeah. Like, they weren't just buds and, like, hung out and did music. No, they kind of hated each other.
Yeah, and I don't think my dad was into John Lennon, really, or my parents, neither of my parents really were, so I know a little bit of his stuff, but not really. And I just feel like George Harrison, it was like, that wasn't even a conversation. Like, I don't know. Because I feel like music from the 70s, either you have to go seek it out, or your parents introduce you to it, and I just... Obviously, I didn't get the George Harrison thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I have to say the same thing. I think, like, my dad would make us, you know, he'd record some records onto a tape so we could go off and listen to it without destroying his music collection. Because that would totally have happened if we'd been allowed to use his record player as, like, nine-year-olds.
Yeah.
We loved listening to those Beatles tapes, but he didn't have any of the solo stuff. Or if he did, he didn't think we'd be into it.
So we were talking about George Harrison before the show, and I was like, I think I read a fact about this recently. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't remember what the fact was. I had to look it up. So basically, if you don't count Wings, which maybe feels like it's a little unfair, but let's just say for sake of argument, you don't count Wings.
Yeah. Linda did nothing.
George Harrison has the most number one singles post Beatles.
Yeah.
That they were all tied at two. And then George Harrison had a hit in the '90s, and that made him have three number one hits as a solo artist. So he's got the most. But like Paul McCartney has like 11 or something.
Yeah,
you know,
let's be honest. I think Paul McCartney is pulling that Wings horse, you know, pretty much solo.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to surmise, but it does kind of feel that way.
Yeah. And the album cover is kind of cool too. It's basically George Harrison sitting in a field with some gnomes. Garden gnomes.
Yeah. It's a cool cover, actually. It almost looks like...
It's neat, yeah.
It almost looks like it could come out now.
Mm-hmm. And it's black and white, and kind of like cool sepia tone. And apparently John Lennon was really pissed about it, because he thought it was like, oh, you think you're better than the Beatles? And like, because they all had a terrible falling out at the end.
Of course he thought he was better than Beatles. He put a 28-song album out.
Yes.
That's all songs that he clearly thought were amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's frequently on lists such as, you know, 100 albums to listen to before you die, like top stuff like that.
You have to have a long day to listen to a 28-song album.
You would. I have to admit, I rarely get past the first record. Listen to it.
This is the thing about a triple record, is like, you gotta get up and flip it.
Exactly.
Get up.
You gotta be like,
get up and flip it. Get up and flip it.
This is my morning. Yeah. So maybe, you know, maybe tomorrow on Spotify.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, it's like, that's, this is one of the things I feel like the like sponsor of this shows should possibly be Apple Music, because I talk about it a lot.
Oh yeah.
But I'm really obsessed with it right now. I feel like that's what's amazing. You just like call up back on a long drive and just listen to the whole thing from beginning to end, and then that's it. You don't even have to have the commitment of searching it.
I don't even have to like
it.
Look for a CD. Like just on there.
It doesn't have to take up physical space in my life. But I have access to anything I want.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. So
I will give us money. Thanks.
With that in mind, you selected a song.
I did. And it's actually, it was a Dylan song, but it is on this album.
Cool.
Because he became friends with Bob Dylan a bit later in the 60s, and they started hanging out. And so you're definitely going to hear some of that influence.
That's
cool. It's a great song. I really like it. It's called If Not For You. And if anyone's getting married, I think this is a really good song.
A perfect, first dance
song.
Okay, this is George Harrison, If Not For You. Listening to Letter Speak. Vancleek FM. That was George Harrison.
So I think that is totally appropriate for weddings. As soon as you put it on, I was like, wait, what if it's about drugs?
That's true of a lot of songs.
It is.
What was the song we were listening to? A sample of the song we were trying to decide.
It was another Goldfrapp song called Ride a White Horse. We were listening to it and I was like, this is about cocaine. Yeah. This is totally about cocaine.
Never even thought of it that way. And then I feel like most songs you could kind of frame. They say that like... you could frame almost any song, like any love song, to make be it a religious song, but just like change love to Jesus or like love
sure,
to God.
Yeah.
And then it's like the same. It can apply to that. But I feel like that's possibly also true with songs about drugs.
Yeah.
Like that huge hit song, I Can't Feel My Face
Without
You.
That's about drugs.
Which you like to think of it as it's just like romantic. He's like blown away by the love. But
drugs.
Not.
That's not what it's about, it's apparently. So
yeah. I think it's drugs.
Yeah.
We should have the weekend on for W.
Yeah, we should definitely have the weekend on for W.
Yeah. We'll call him in.
This is a good segue because this brings us to Tina's Taboo.
Tina's Taboo. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good music.
Thanks.
So the taboo today,
yes,
is genetic testing.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I was not at all prepared for that.
Oh, well, good.
I don't know what I thought it was going to be, but it was definitely not that.
Sure. So it's more about genetic testing. Obviously, there's a medical place for genetic testing.
Yeah.
It's more about the personal genomics and biotechnology companies that do this.
Okay. So like if I don't want to have a baby girl, for example.
No.
Not that
so,
kind.
No. So that would be, that would be like embryonic choosing.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So what do you mean?
So it's a thing. There's a few companies that do this. One of the most well-known is one called 23andMe. Mm-hmm. So basically you provide a saliva testing sample that is partially, there's some science in here.
Science.
That I can't.
I'll put on my science glasses. Yeah,
that I won't necessarily be able to explain.
Okay.
And then it's partially genotyped and the results are posted online for you to check out and to basically.
Oh, is this like where you find out like what your genetic heritage is?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen two things about this recently.
Yeah. And so it's a, you can look at your predisposition for more than 90 traits and conditions ranging from baldness to blindness. And that's their little like tagline from 2008. So you get this uninterpreted raw genetic data and it can be downloaded by customers.
Yeah.
And then customers who bought tests with an ancestry related component have online access to genealogical DNA test results and tools, including a relative matching database.
So we recently watched this documentary and it was about, this tiny town of 24 people in North Dakota, but somehow it's like still a city. And then the leader, this like famous racist, who's the like leader of some like white supremacist group in the United States, decided he was going to move there and he was buying up properties for $500 each.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to do this in a short version, but anyways, it's a documentary about this guy going to this town and trying to make take a super over the
racist town.
Yeah. Trying to make a super racist town. And one of the like clips in this documentary was him going on like a daytime talk show. It was some daytime talk show. It was like a Donahue or like a Sally Jesse Raphael, but it wasn't one of them that I recognized. And they did this testing and he came back. He was like 74% like Russian or something. And the rest was like sub-Saharan African, which was obviously much to the satisfaction of everyone in the audience.
Yeah.
But so that was like one thing that immediately came to mind. Crazy. And then, also recently there's like a viral campaign that's going on right now where they get all these people in a room. I think it's one of these companies that's doing this testing. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a viral advertisement. They get all these people in a room, they get like 50 people and they record them like one-on-one talking about like their prejudices against other people.
Okay.
And then they do this testing on them and then they bring them all back in the room together and they make them like talk about, they like, this guy doesn't like Germans.
Okay.
It's like an Irish guy who doesn't like Germans.
Sure. Yeah.
And he's like sitting there being like, oh, I hate the Germans, blah blah blah, and they're like, well, that guy's German, and they're in the room together. But then they make them read the results,
right?
And of course they're all like
mixed up, who nanny or whatever.
I'm sure it's like completely like planned this way. It's an advertisement. But the like one person who is like black and one person who is white find out they're hugging? Cousins.
Aww.
And they have this like super intense like moment where they find out they're like cousins. Anyways.
Yeah. So I think it's
very interesting kind of science.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting concept because it's this kind of question of personal genetic testing.
Yeah.
Where, yes, I think everyone is entitled to know like exactly what is going on in their body.
Mm.
But personally, I've never had any, like, I don't care what mix of European I am because it's just going to be born white Europeans. Like, I do not care.
Right.
Like, there's so, you know, it's the dog's breakfast of Northern Europe, basically. Right.
Yeah. Maybe, but maybe not.
Sure. Maybe I have something amazing in there.
Yes.
Well, I do, obviously. It's me. But, but I think it's also interesting because they actually have to put a warning out there before you even open your results, where especially for the part where you're kind of looking for relative matching.
Okay.
Because it can be a huge surprise because there is way more people who think they're related to their fathers,
oh,
but are not. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I read an article about this guy that did this as a kind of like, oh, it'll be fun. It'll be a fun family thing.
Oopsies.
Yeah. And then he found out that he wasn't related to his father. And his father actually had a completely different family that he never told anyone about.
Oh.
Because he found these, you know, half siblings.
Yeah. See, it's like one of those, like, there's ignorance is bliss kind of things about this, right? Maybe better not to know some of this information.
And it kind of tore up the family because some people were like, no, this is ridiculous. And other people were like, what? Yeah. Also, I think it has interesting, you know, legal and health implications because there's no law in Canada governing how genetic test results can be used by insurers or employers.
Oh, that's scary.
So that's scary too.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of, you know, if you ever saw the movie Gattaca.
I have not, but it does start with a G.
It does. It's with Ethan Hawke.
Okay.
And Uma Thurman.
Uh-huh.
And it's about people who are basically genetically engineered at, like before birth. And so this character that Ethan Hawke plays was not genetically engineered before birth, but Uma Thurman was. And so he basically takes on this other guy's.
Oh, wait, I have seen this movie. I'm remembering it.
He has to take on a new identity, and Jude Law's in it. So he takes on his identity because he's a swimmer that did have this genetic stuff done, who had an accident in a foreign country. So he's genetically fine, but he's physically unable because, you know, he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah. It's a weird movie.
Oh, it's interesting, though. And so there's this whole, you know, extreme prejudice against people who have not had this genetic, conditioning or whatever they're calling it in the movie done.
Yeah. I feel like it would raise questions too about, like, definitely with the insurance and that sort of thing, but privacy issues, like you're providing an incredibly thorough data set to some company.
Exactly. Like, for example, if I got this genetic testing done and then I got the results and for some reason my employer was allowed to look at it, say I have, you know, the predisposition for like a really early Alzheimer's, like would someone want to employ me into my 40s or 50s knowing that I could, you know, succumb to this disease?
Yeah, that's kind of weird. And I feel like, I don't know if I sound like a naive Canadian, but I always feel like these kinds of things quickly get like nipped in the bud in Canada, and then the United States it doesn't get nipped in the bud because there's so many lobby groups that like companies win and then they find all these evil ways to like,
Interestingly enough, with this company that I'm talking about, they have a Canadian arm and an American arm, and the Canadian arm can do different things than the American arm because the American arm has like shut down a bunch of the health related ones because they're afraid of getting sued.
Interesting. Well, the litigious American society.
And the Canadian one's like, no, we can still do it.
Yeah.
Because there's like, no laws here.
I'm like pro big government, but like, I feel like regulations or privacy regulations are really important. There's a privacy, this is totally not related, but my mind wandered over here that there's a privacy regulation conversation in Canada right now because of facial recognition.
Right. Okay.
So there's the potential for security purposes to do facial recognition. But people are pitching, some companies are pitching like a store. For example, you could walk into the grocery store and you don't even need your like points card or whatever. You just get picked up on facial recognition and it has like your purchasing history and special offers for you and all of the stuff that could just be picked up by like cameras when you walk in the store. So like in one sense, you're like, okay, that's great. I don't have to have that stupid card in my wallet. But in another sense, now you don't have any choice of whether you're joining, because all those programs like Air Miles and like points cards, whatever, they're just like collecting information on you so they can market to you better.
Well, that reminds me exactly of what happens when, you know, I'm scrolling around the web and then I go to Facebook and I get targeted ads at me.
Yes.
That's exactly it. And it's like, I don't want you to know I went to some dumb website for shoes.
It happens.
Like, calm down.
I had a recent situation and I wanted to share an ad within work and I was like, it was on this website when I found it.
Yeah.
Don't judge me, please.
Yeah.
I mean, our information is more and more accessible, and this is like genetic testing would just be another layer of, you know, intense amount of factual information that would be available about you if you were willingly giving that information up.
Yeah. And I don't see how it can be this is just the one company that does it this way, where they send you the information electronically over the internet. Like maybe there's a way that it could be more like, I don't know how genetic testing is done within a hospital.
Right.
Like if you're going in and you're like, well, I need to know if I have this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that sticking something in the mail and mailing it isn't that secure, but putting it on the internet and emailing it is definitely not secure.
Yeah. And that's how you get your results for this one company. I don't know how the others do it, but
So would you do it?
I think it would depend. maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
There's a part, little part of me that's curious.
Yeah. Like, I think it'd be interesting, not so much for the familial background stuff, but maybe some of the genetic stuff might be kind of cool. Like, I know I need to wear glasses. So I don't even know if that's a thing.
Shocking.
Yeah. I don't even know if that's a genetically tested thing. But yeah, it could be neat. Or, you know, maybe I do have a interesting ancestor somewhere.
Maybe
but
you do.
But I'm like, again, like, I'm just not into ancestry stuff. So yeah. Who knows? Maybe.
We only got 10 minutes left. I don't know how we're going to transition to the next topic from here. Other than just to do it.
Okay.
The next topic we have is the song Pony by Ginuwine.
Yep.
It is both a topic and a song selection this evening. We started talking about the song. We started talking about the letter G and we were like, we have to do this song because it's such a ridiculous, huge hit.
Yep. Love this song so much.
Everyone I know loves this song and it has been a hit song for like more than 10 years. It just won't go away in a ridiculous way, but it's particularly popular right now because it was used in two movies. One you might know, it's called Magic Mike, and the other one you might know as Magic Mike XXL, which I have not seen. Have you seen the first Magic Mike?
I saw the first one. I have to say that Channing Tatum can move.
Yeah, I mean, it's a surprisingly dark movie, actually. Like, the you would think from, like, the preview, you're like, oh, this is going to be a fun movie about stripping. Woohoo, Girls' Night. And then, like, you go and you're like, oh, this got dark fast.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this is going to be, like, burlesque.
Steven Soderbergh, I think, who makes dark movies, so it shouldn't be shocking.
Yeah. Something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
Nothing too terrible happens, but it's fun. It's a good flick.
This song is in both of those movies. It's a big enough song that they used it in both movies.
Yeah. They were like, this is his jam.
So we were talking about that. And we looked it up on IMDb. This song has actually been in 10 different movies over the last decade. Like, got tons of, he's got a million IMDb credits as himself performing the song in movies, whatever.
Yeah.
Definitely like the definition of a one hit wonder.
What was the first film? It was called Booty Call.
Yeah, it definitely has had an interesting trajectory as a song goes. So it was the first big hit song by producer Timbaland, which I actually think we talked about on the show when we were talking about Missy Elliott.
Yeah, we did, because Ginuwine kind of grew up with that crew. Yeah.
It's definitely going to get people on the dance floor if you hear it. But so we got talking about it and I was like, oh, I heard a cover song version of it this week.
Yeah.
And it was disappointing. Mm-hmm. So then I started to look up cover versions of it, which I've got three of kind of queued up here that I'll just play little samples of. I feel like they're all disappointing compared to the original.
Yeah.
We can talk about it. Why? I'm just going to like open them up here. So this is the first one that came by. So this is the Shills, you know, the Shills. They're like a rock band. So this is their cover. I'm just a bachelor looking for a pilot. It's like a rock version.
He's looking for a pilot.
I mean, I'm enjoying his like attempt at the vocal.
Yeah. I have to say I don't know the lyrics to Pony except for the exact chorus.
Yeah. So to the point that the lyrics of the song don't matter.
No, they don't. It's all about that backing.
What counts in the song is not the lyrics. So then
I don't know what that is. Like synth? What?
Ed
what
Sheeran.
Makes that noise? Okay. Oh, Ed Sheeran.
A hugely popular pop star.
I don't know why.
Did an acoustic cover of that. Here, we just listen to this version.
No.
Also missing the heart and soul.
It's like one of those, you know, someone in a university cafe.
Oh, and you hear it and you're like, no, you shouldn't be covering
house,
this song. The song is not for you to cover, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Excuse me, sir.
I did find one
that's
a pretty good version. This is from a series called Like a Version, and they get people to do interesting covers.
Okay.
So this is a band called Abby May. I'm actually not sure how you pronounce it. And this is a band, like a band with a drummer and whatever. And the sound. Mm-hmm. The important sound of this song is being done by a beatboxer.
Oh.
Or maybe it's a vocoder.
Well, he's got to have like a vocal something going on there.
He's got like he's doing it with his mouth anyways.
Okay.
We'll wait till the vocals come in here, the lead vocals, because it's pretty good. This has got a female lead singer.
Oh.
Which is also kind of fun.
I'm just a bachelor. That's kind of fun. You know what? I feel that Beyonce should cover this song.
Yeah, I feel like it takes, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like all these covers are just like, oh, I'm not really going to put that much sexual energy into this song. A song that's rooted in sexual energy. That's the whole point of the song.
I kind of want Beyonce to cover it. And I want it to be for that terrible film, which I will never see, 50 Shades of Grey. Because she did a soundtrack song for that album. And it's amazing.
Yeah,
and it was a cover of Crazy in Love.
I was going to say it's a cover of her own song.
And
right?
It's amazing.
It takes a certain kind of artist to be able to cover their own song.
Yeah.
Within like, it was like less than 10 years of the first time they released it.
Yeah.
And that artist is Beyonce.
So good.
Like every episode of this show, we can find a way to come back to Beyonce.
Yeah.
So a little confession about Genuine. So first of all, the song was released on an album called Greatest Hits, but it was his debut album, which is amazing. I don't know why no one thought of doing that before this.
So smart.
I own it, but I purchased it for 25 cents at Valley Village because I knew that there was nothing I would want on it other than this song.
I'm okay.
It also has a cover of Prince's When Doves Cry.
Oh.
Which is weird.
No.
Really? But I feel like you probably shouldn't cover Prince When Doves Cry. Like, it's too much of an iconic song. It's like when you go on American Idol and they say, like, don't cover Aretha Franklin. You know, like you're auditioning, don't cover those big songs because you just can't do it.
It's not going to happen. Yeah.
And I would like to put forth the argument that this is one of those big songs that maybe you shouldn't try to cover. Maybe you should just let the song be what it is.
It's like, it's so iconic. And as you said, it's in at least 10 films. There might be more.
Yeah.
TV shows. It's extremely well known, and it kind of means something funky's going to happen. I got to find a supercut of all the films that's happening in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really all I have to say.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. I think we should just let the song wrap it up.
Yeah.
Because we only got a couple minutes left, and I think everyone's going to need to enjoy the fullness.
Absolutely.
Of the bass line. 100%
agree.
So this is Genuine Pony. This is Letter Speak and the letter G. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Till I reach your ponytail.